die in that case. Talion tapped the sword at his hip thoughtfully.
He's enjoying this. Is he insane?
Lydia's lip twitched. Velthrin's fate could hinge on his actions. I can't let him die in there. You need to take this seriously. There's more at risk than your pride or even your life. Lydia pointed at the Sekhes on his hip, still disguised by Talion's metal-altering sorcery. If Adon gets his hands on that sword, publicly, there's a good chance it will lead to a war with Velthrin. Talion scratched at his chin. You really think an army would march to war over a piece of metal?
It's more than that, Talion. That sword is a symbol of a religion, and one I think you should take a little more seriously, given that there are fair odds you could be a figure in that religion's history if you survive long enough.
Talion tilted his head to the side. You don't actually think I'm related to one of your gods, do you? Lydia raised two fingers to adjust her glasses.
I don't know, Talion, but the people of Velthrin need something to believe in. It's been years since one of our gods has appeared in person. Even if you're just a man with a sword, many will see you as a sign. You have a good heart, too. I could see people wanting to follow you.
Talion leaned back further, resting his head against the wall and looking away from her. I've led people before. It rarely ends well. If a religion wants to follow me just because I carry a particular weapon, I don't want anything to do with it. Lydia scoffed.
Don't be so dismissive of an opportunity to help people just because you can't agree with every element of their reasoning. Maybe if you took the time to learn about the Paladins of Taos, you'd understand why they'd be willing to follow a symbol.
He turned straight toward her, his blue eyes focusing on her with a sudden intensity. Would you follow me, Lydia? Knowing what you know about my heritage, about my doubts?
Careful, Lydia. Don't be impulsive about this.
No, she replied.
But I could follow who you could be, if you give yourself a chance to grow.
In truth, Lydia considered,
I would rather be the one leading you, but you don't have to know that.
Talion sighed, throwing up his hands. I think you're making assumptions about who I could be, based solely on an item, not my own background or personality. You know practically nothing about me.
You're wrong. I know you carried a dying Asharan, who had tried to murder you over your shoulders, trying to rescue him from torture. That speaks much for your character, and for your potential as a symbol. More than the sword, at least to me.
The swordsman looked away from Lydia, slumping his shoulders. If you're basing your assessment of my personality on one of my greatest failures, I can't imagine you have very high standards. Lydia pressed her lips together, biting back a sharp response.
He's still grieving,
she reminded herself.
I was talking about your intentions. You took a tremendous risk to try to help someone else. That's commendable. But if you don't like my example, give me a better one. How do you define yourself?
He glanced back in her direction, but still refused to meet her gaze. I don't really know. That's a part of why I'm here. People see the sword and assume that I'm some sort of demigod, or that I have the makings of a great hero. I've spent my entire life living in the shadow of a god that I don't even know if I believe in. Lydia quirked a brow.
I don't want to be cruel, but that explanation sounded like you define yourself by the sword just as much as anyone else does.
Talion grimaced. There's some truth to that. That's probably why I hate it so much when other people mention it. I won't have peace of mind until I know who wanted me to have this thing and why.
And then what? You trade the expectations of the general populace for the expectations of whoever wanted you to have the Sekhes?
Lydia asked, folding her arms.
Talion shook his head.
I don't know. You've got a point. Maybe I'm the one who's obsessing over the expectations of others. Maybe my past doesn't matter. But I feel like there's a piece of a puzzle missing, and I can't rest until I find it.
Well, when you put it like that, I can see where you're coming from.
Lydia's expression softened. She reached out and patted him on the arm.
Well, I'll keep helping you look for answers. After this is all over, I think you should come with me to Velthrin and see if any of the other paladins have information that could help you track down where the sword came from. In the meantime, try not to be too suicidal.
Talion raised a hand, leaning his face into it. I'll take your warning about this tournament seriously.
If you really believe that other lives may be at risk, I'll take the necessary steps to ensure I minimize that risk. Lydia nodded.
Thank you.
As for later, I don't know if I'm going to want to meet with the rest of the Paladins of Taos. I'm doing this to help those Rethri, and I'll try not to start a war in the process. I'm willing to learn more about your paladins, but I won't make you any promises beyond that.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Lydia smiled.
Being able to make your own choices is one of the tenets of Eritar, in fact. And Cytirans and followers of Eritar both have a strong proclivity toward educating yourself, even if it means doubting elements of your faith.
Good, he said simply. For now, I have more important things to educate myself about. If you're right that there is a real danger to my life, I should be gathering as much intelligence as I can about the tournament before I participate in it.
You keep saying tournament, Lydia pointed out. This won't be a tournament. It's not going to be a competition with brackets and eliminations. Think more along the lines of a trial by combat.
Hmm. Have you seen anything like this happen before? Talion asked. Lydia nodded.
It's very rare, but occasionally you'll see the Court of the Spear used to settle a dispute between nobles, or a trial where insufficient evidence is available. The accusing party will choose a champion and the terms, and the defending party will have to represent him or herself and accept those terms.
Talion scratched at his chin, considering. That doesn't seem very fair if the person being accused isn't a warrior. And if the accuser determines the specific terms as well, doesn't that mean they could offer something absurd?
Trial by combat is usually a last resort. The judicial system here is heavily influenced by politics. The priests of Xeracillus would hate it. The short explanation is that judges have nearly unlimited authority, and that trial by combat is one of few options the defense has available if the judge appears to be disposed against them.
Lydia took a breath.
That's essentially the situation you're in. Given how public this is, they have two options. One is to present something that outwardly appears to be fair and attempt to humiliate you. The second is to put you at an overwhelming disadvantage, like to send you in without a weapon, and claim that the match is disproportionate due to the severity of your crime or your affiliation with the Taos Pantheon.
Talion nodded in understanding. What do you find more likely?
Byron won't want to come across as weak, which means he won't do something that makes the challenge look impossible. On the other hand, he also won't want to give Talion any chance of success. If I was in Byron's position, I would make the match look to be somewhat fair on the surface, but put you at a hidden disadvantage. Perhaps he'll have a sorcerer on the outside to interfere, or give your opponent a poisoned weapon,
Lydia explained. You would do that in his position? Talion quirked a brow.
I didn't mean it quite like that, Lydia sighed. Essentially, I just mean that from his perspective, that's the best way of accomplishing his goals.
Talion nodded.
All right.
So to avoid poison, I don't get hit. To avoid outside sorcery, I... Don't get hit? Lydia frowned.
I'll talk to the court sorcerers prior to the match and try to determine if there will be outside interference. If there will be, I'll see if there's any way I can warn you in advance or counteract it.
Thank you, Talion replied.
Are you certain you still want to do this?
Lydia asked.
Honestly, I'd advise you against it. You're putting yourself in Adon's power, and once he gets a grip on you, I doubt he'll release it.
Talion narrowed his eyes. Then I'll just have to break his hands. Lydia felt herself smirk in spite of the absurdity of the response.
He's so arrogant. It's almost charming in a way.
Jonan finally returned with a stack of dishes, setting them down across the table.
The kitchen try to eat you or something?
Lydia asked him.
No, not this time,
Jonan winked at her.
It wasn't hungry.
Well, I am, Talion said, moving away from the wall to take a seat.
We'll have to talk about this more, Lydia pointed out. We only have 2 days to prepare before the challenge.
Don't let her scare you, Talion, Jonan said, taking a seat. She's just worried about you.
Talion glanced over to Jonan. Really? That's not the impression I got at all. I was under the impression she was more worried that I would trigger a catastrophic war.
I can be worried about both, Lydia said. But Jonan is right about one thing. You shouldn't worry. You should prepare.
And let us help, Jonan offered. I think I have a trick or two you might find useful."
Varudin pushed the plate of garlic butter potatoes over to Lydia's side of the table.
"Hey, we need to talk."
"About what?" Lydia asked, accepting the potatoes and picking at one of them with her fork.
"Someone left me a letter that says it's from that Talian guy. The prisoner," Varudin explained.
Lydia quirked a brow.
"What did it say?"
"Says he wants me to escort him into the arena and to make sure there aren't any other guards on the way in, since I was nice to him before. He doesn't want to get arrested again. You think it's some kind of trick?"
Lydia shrugged.
"Sounds pretty reasonable, actually. I wouldn't feel very comfortable in his position."
"Yeah, neither would I. I'm surprised he's accepting it all."
Varudin stared down at his plate.
"Do you think he's really some kind of criminal?"
"He was carrying a Teosian symbol, Varudin. That's against the law."
She jabbed a potato for emphasis.
"I guess. Just seems a little extreme to put him through all this because of a sword."
Lydia smiled.
"You've got a good heart, but you're a little too trusting. He wouldn't have that sword without a reason."
Varudin frowned.
"What do you think I should do?"
"I think it's a good idea to make this match happen. So if you have a way to enable that, it's probably good. Tell him you'll help. I'll come with you, though, and back you up in case he tries anything."
The younger sorcerer nodded solemnly.
"Thanks, Lydia. You're the best," she chuckled.
"Don't worry about it. Besides, I've been itching to meet him. Have you heard anything about who he'll be fighting?"
The sorcerer laughed.
"More like, who haven't I heard he'll be fighting? The rumors are running wild. Corin Matthews, Sophia Beaumont, Edric Case, Velis Jaldin, maybe even Landon of the Twin Edges."
Lydia nodded, trying to keep her face neutral. It was easier than forcing a smile.
"Those are almost all Queensguard,"
Lydia realized.
"And some of the best. I think I've heard of all of them before. And Velis and Landon are both champion duelists. I've seen Landon fight before, at least. Maybe I can give Talian some advice if he ends up being the opponent."
"That's quite a list," Lydia mused.
"I wonder who they'll end up picking."
"Rumor has it that Adon will select the champion personally,"
Varudin told her. Lydia blinked at that.
"Adon is going to be there?"
"That's the word,"
Varudin grinned.
"Exciting, isn't it?"
Lydia nodded, taking a fork of potatoes and chewing fiercely, thinking.
"They won't need to have a sorcerer in the stands to interfere,"
Lydia realized.
"Adon could just do it himself. I need to be ready to counter that. But how? If I put a protection spell on Talian before the match, it'll work on anything, not just Adon's interference, and they'd certainly detect it and trace the spell back to me. That's no good." "How's your hand healing?"
Lydia asked absently. Varudin winced.
"Healing seems to have slowed down. Guess that ointment wasn't quite the cure-all Sethridge told me it would be."
Lydia nodded.
"You have my sympathies, and my thanks, too. If you wouldn't have gotten that burn, I probably would have tinkered with the sword and burned myself."
"Better me than you, then,"
he smiled.
"But if I took a burn for you, you can treat me to a better meal than this sometime."
"Deal,"
Lydia grinned. Lydia stood with Varudin near the rear entrance to the arena, both of them wearing their formal robes. She saw Talian approaching in innocuous peasant garb, but she initially ignored him. Varudin seemed to notice Talian a few moments later, waving with his bandaged hand.
"That's him,"
Varudin said. The sorceress nodded to him, resting a hand on her saber as Talian approached, trying to look overtly suspicious.
"Thank you for meeting me here,"
Talian said, reaching out with his left hand to clasp Varudin's own uninjured hand. Varudin clasped Talian's hand at the wrist, smiling like he was seeing an old friend.
"Good to see you again,"
Varudin said, releasing his grip on Talian's arm after a brief trust-testing squeeze.
"And who is this lovely creature?"
Talian asked, turning toward Lydia. The sorceress barely resisted rolling her eyes.
"Lydia Scryer,"
she replied, extending a hand. When he knelt and kissed her hand, she did roll her eyes.
"Gods, what a show-off."
"It's my earnest pleasure to meet you, Miss Scryer," he said.
"Good to meet you. Ready to fight?"
He stood up and nodded.
"Naturally." He turned his head toward Varudin. Have you made the preparations I asked for? I don't feel like walking in here just to get arrested again.
She glanced back and forth between the two men, and then back toward Varudin.
Don't worry. I've cleared the halls up to the armory. We'll get you geared up, and then watch you from the stands.
He paused for a moment, considering.
Didn't you bring the sword?
Talion quirked a brow. I thought you still had my sword.
Not bad, Talion. Not bad.
Varudin frowned.
I'm not sure on that, honestly. Maybe one of the older sorcerers has it.
Lydia shrugged.
I'm sure you can ask after the match is concluded.
Yes, Talion replied. Of course. Varudin led the way into the back entrance, and true to his word, the halls were empty of guards. They passed several rooms before stopping at an unlabeled door on the right side of a long hall, which Varudin unlocked with a key. The door was directly across from another hallway. Lydia glanced down the hall, noting an open doorway at the end of it, the entrance to the arena itself.
There should be everything you could need in here, he said, opening the door.
Any idea on who he's fighting yet?
Lydia asked, hoping for any last-minute insight.
What, and spoil the fun? Varudin said, chuckling. No, I haven't heard anything. You can bet on the Queensguard, though.
Lydia stepped in the room, holding the door open as she quickly scanned it for enemies. There were no other people inside. No visible ones, at least.
I need to go tell Adon that he's here, Varudin said. Lydia, can you watch him for me?
Of course. I won't let him escape.
Lydia replied with a grin.
The match is set to start in half an hour. Someone will come get you when it's time. Good luck.
Varudin raised a hand to his right shoulder, giving Talion some kind of unfamiliar salute, and then turned to leave.
So far so good.
Lydia closed the door to the armory as Talion stepped inside.
Dominion of knowledge, illuminate the hidden.
She scanned the room a second time, but nothing had changed. She breathed a sigh of relief, reaching into the pouch at her left side and retrieving a small glass mirror, which she placed on the left side of the room behind a rack of spears. Retrieving a piece of parchment and a quill, she hastily scribbled a note and pressed it against the surface of the mirror.
At the armory. Clear so far.
She ran a finger across the mirror, following Jonan's instructions to send the message, and then removed the piece of parchment.
Okay,
she said, turning to Talion, who was busy testing the weight of a sword on the opposite side of the room.
The guard should be here in just under 30 minutes. We have a brief window to plan.
I think our plan is fairly well established at this point, Talion said. I just need to find a good blade.
Everything I've heard has indicated you're going up against someone from the Queen's Guard, which means they will likely be using a sword, a shield, and plate. You're probably best off with either a mace and a shield or a reach weapon like a spear or a glaive,
Lydia advised. She glanced back over at the mirror, seeing a different note showing in the surface now.
Acknowledged. I am in position in the stands, it read.
That was quick. She ran a finger across the mirror in the opposite direction, which would remove the frozen image of her note from Jonan's mirror and switch to showing the room. If they were lucky, Talion's opponent would come into this armory next, and then Jonan would be able to see the opponent preparing and warn Lydia in advance. Not that she could do much if Talion had already left the armory at that point, but if Jonan observed something suspicious, like poison, Lydia knew she might have to take drastic action to save Talion's life.
I'm no good with a mace and shield, Talion confessed.
Your logic is sound, but I think my odds are best with a weapon I'm familiar with.
You should have brought the Sakas then,
Lydia pointed out. Talion shook his head vehemently.
I thought you were the one who didn't want to risk losing it.
Sure, but losing your life could be almost as bad,
Lydia said with a wry grin.
I'm flattered that you think I'm worth almost as much as a sword, Talion said, hefting a different, much longer sword. It was unadorned and looked inordinately heavy.
I think you're worth at least twice as much as that sword, Lydia said, pointing at the one he was carrying. Just perhaps not quite as much as the one that was forged through the collaborative effort of 7 gods. I think that's fair.
Talion shrugged. I think you underestimate both me and old Rusty here. He lowered the sword's tip to the ground, a smirk crossing his face. Lydia narrowed her eyes. You can't seriously intend to use that thing. It's huge, unwieldy, and it looks like it's probably not even made of steel.
Iron, Talion said, tapping a finger against the pommel. Good, reliable iron. Heavily used, but unbroken. Someone made good use of this sword once. Seems a shame to let it die on a shelf.
Now who's getting overly sentimental about swords?
Lydia smirked.
But how does he know all that? Is he speaking figuratively, or is his metal dominion bond really potent enough that he can tell all that information just by touching it?
From a practical standpoint, a lighter sword isn't going to be able to bust plate. Sure, steel would be superior, but they do not have any heavy steel swords here. I could merge two of them together, but it would be a considerable expenditure of sorcery, and I would be playing my hand early. I would rather my opponents, both in the ring and in the crowd, not have a good idea of my capabilities until after the match begins, Talion explained. Lydia nodded.
That's a better explanation than I considered. But do you really think you can incapacitate someone in plate with a sword like that?
Easily, Talion said. This isn't my first bout in an arena, you know.
You mentioned you had sword experience, and I saw how you handled yourself with Istvan. But you never mentioned anything about fighting in a ring.
Talion grinned. I'm just full of surprises.
You should at least put on some armor,
Lydia pointed out, gesturing at a stand where well-maintained leather, chain, and plate armor were stocked. Talion shook his head. No, it'll just slow me down. If I'm fighting against an opponent who is wearing plate and using a shorter weapon than I am, I want to be mobile. I can try to outdistance him.
How? You're still missing about half a leg.
She pointed at his injured leg, and then moved her hands up to her hips to glower at him. He shook his leg in the air. Ah, it barely stings at this point. Sure, it'd be bad if someone hit me there, but I don't intend to get hit.
You're going to be murdered if someone in plate manages to get on top of you, though,
Lydia pointed out.
That's quite a risk.
I know, Talion grinned. Keeps things interesting. Lydia sighed.
It's been nice knowing you, really.
Don't look so grim. Talion put a hand on her shoulder.
He's awfully affectionate, she realized. Maybe it's a Rethri thing.
I have this completely under control.
Nothing to do but to try to believe him at this point. And possibly try to cheat on his behalf if necessary. We've got some time before the match. Do you want to spar a little?
Lydia offered. That sounds like fun, Talion said. But I think it's a little too late for that. I do have another idea, though.
He walked back to the weapon rack, picking up the next sword down the line in his left hand, lifting it up and down to test the weight. Checking the weight of all the weapons so you can know how much effort you have to put into your parries?
Lydia guessed, intrigued. Something like that, Talion replied. You'll see soon enough.
You're going to tease me before you potentially fight to the death?
Is there any better time? Talion grinned, setting the sword down and picking up the next one. The Court of the Spear was a colossal colosseum, made in the times of Zixis for teams of slaves to battle to the death. The floor was unforgiving stone, gray-tainted with the faded red of blood from days long gone. While the court was still used for trials by combat, such events were rare and sparsely attended. This crowd packed the stands nearly to overflowing. The rumors of a battle involving a demigod had spread to the far reaches of the city, igniting the local imagination in a way that no simple court battle could. And of course, it was a rare opportunity to gaze up on Adon himself, the god of ascension. Adon stood on a flat, raised platform, overlooking the stands and arena. Even high above, he cast an air of majesty that even Lydia could not refute. His bright blue robes were trimmed with silver, and his brown hair pulled back into an elegant ponytail. On his right hand, he wore a ring inlaid with a transparent crystal that glittered in the dawnfire's light. Only his eyes showed any hint of his age. No gray touched his hair, and only the faintest smile lines marked his face.
King of Orland's gods, what are you playing at?
Lydia took her seat next to Viruddin. The two of them had a box to themselves, one of the benefits of being among the highest-ranking officials in the city.
Nearby, Lydia could see several other private boxes. The Queen Regent herself was absent, but her son, the Crown Prince Byron, stood in his own private box, flanked by a half-dozen armed members of the Queen's Guard. At 16, he was easily old enough to rule as king now, but his face still glowed with the exuberance of youth. His flowing purple cloak, trimmed with silver, only added to that image, enshrouding the majority of his slender form like a blanket.
"What game are you playing here, young prince?"
She had only met the prince twice, and on each occasion he had asked her intelligent, if uneducated, questions.
"Why is it that some people are born with magic, and others are not?"
he had inquired in one instance, but Sethridge had cut her off before she had a chance to reply. Sethridge's response,
that it was the same reason some people were born as princes,
had been hardly adequate, but she had not been of sufficient ranking to argue with him at the time. Byron's position in the kingdom was an awkward one, and Lydia felt a twinge of sympathy for him. Orlan was steadily developing into a theocracy, and his own mother was revered as a goddess, but he was not considered a god. Lydia suspected that was why he had not yet been crowned as king. It would represent a shift in power that would be disadvantageous to the local gods. The mysterious figures that had been discovered near the prince's room in the palace just prior to his scheduled coronation could have easily been hired by Aedon or even the Queen Regent. An assassination attempt was an excellent excuse for delaying the prince's ascension, and the fact that Myros had been the one to catch the assassins made it even more likely that the local gods had arranged the situation for political reasons. Other nearby boxes were occupied by the high nobility, another group that saw their power waning in the face of the rising power of the Aedonate religion. Lydia noted many of their eyes were on Aedon rather than the arena below.
"So, what'd he pick?"
Viruden asked.
"Great sword,"
Lydia replied, a twinge of distaste in her voice. Viruden chuckled.
"Seems like his type. I wonder how long he'll last down there."
"I wouldn't count him out just yet,"
Lydia said, surprising herself.
"Really?"
Viruden quirked a brow.
"I thought we were setting him up to fail."
"Sometimes it's not possible to set up the circumstances of a fight to guarantee one outcome or another,"
Lydia pointed out. Viruden nodded.
"I hear that. Still, I wouldn't give him very good odds. Oh, look, here he comes."
Talion strode out into the arena to the sound of 10,000 cheers, his huge, unadorned greatsword leaning against his right shoulder. He still wore simple, unadorned brown clothing without a hint of armor. He was limping, but just a bit. It might not have been noticeable if Lydia didn't know what to look for. She winced at the sight. Viruden clapped along with the crowd, laughing at the same time, but Lydia felt her heart tighten in her chest.
"Don't get dead, Talion."
He seemed to hear her thoughts, looking up from the arena floor in her general direction. She doubted he could see her from the floor below, but he waved, both to her and to the rest of the crowd, which only caused another surge of cheers. Lydia adjusted her pouch, slipping it onto her lap, ready to remove the second of the mirrors that Jonan had given her if necessary. She didn't want to use it if she could avoid it. Viruden would undoubtedly notice she was practicing some sort of sorcery, and she wasn't sure she could explain this one away. She had discussed a number of different contingency plans with Jonan, but she hoped they wouldn't have to attempt any of them. Every plan had its own risks. The most likely involved Jonan attempting to make Talion invisible so that he could escape, but Lydia suspected that Aedon would have ways of countering invisibility. If he was actually Donovan Taylor, he had been practicing knowledge sorcery before Lydia was born. The door opened on the other side of the arena, and a figure in heavy plate armor stepped out, carrying a shield and blade, just as she had predicted. The crowd cheered as the knight raised his sword to Aedon in salute, and the crowd continued to cheer as another figure followed the first into the arena. Another armored figure, this one in chainmail, carrying a shield and a mace. And a third, armored in plate, and carrying a shield and a hand axe. and a fourth, helmless, carrying a pair of short steel swords already drawn. He was young, but his unkempt brown hair and untrimmed stubble gave him a rugged look, and the crowd gave another surge of cheers as they recognized him at the same time that Lydia did.
Landon of the Twin Edges, champion duelist, and...
Lydia understood, as the three other figures fanned out to surround Talion.
Three other members of the Queen's Guard. Gods!
Lydia stood up in her chair.
They're going to make him fight 4-1.
The doors to the opposite end of the arena remained open, however, and a fifth figure stepped in to face Talion directly. With silvery armor etched with golden runes, and carrying a spear formed from an unmarred piece of steel metal, there was no mistaking Talion's final challenger. Myros, the god of battle, had entered the ring. The crowd went silent.
He's not supposed to be here yet, Lydia considered, but there he is. Cytira, forgive me for my arrogance. I should never have let Talion stay in the city.
Challenger!
Adon's voice resounded across the arena, sounding as clear to Lydia as if he stood directly at her side.
Sound sorcery,
Lydia processed absently, her mind too focused on the oncoming battle to worry about Adon's method of projecting his voice.
You have proven your bravery to answer my call to the arena. You no doubt seek to prove the legitimacy of your gods. We will now test if your might matches your will. You now face several of the greatest warriors of this kingdom. Myros, the god of battle himself, will be the judge of your prowess. If you can survive to the satisfaction of Myros and myself, I will grant you freedom, the rights of an ambassador, and any boon within my power.
Gods, he's not even trying to make this look fair. He's trying to sell the idea that the reward is worth the risk.
The crowd shouted encouragements, and Talion made a slashing gesture with his hand. The crowd seemed to understand, going quiet after a moment of murmuring. Talion turned to Adon to shout a reply.
And if I defeat them all?
Lydia looked down at Talion, eyes widening.
Don't. That's suicidal.
The crowd's reaction to this was a mixture of clapping and laughter, and after a moment, Adon waved and silenced them again.
If you can defeat all of your opponents, Adon said, I will offer you the chance at a place in my own court.
Talion gave Adon a formal bow at the waist, and then turned toward Myros.
Well then, what are we waiting for?
The rules are simple,
a voice came from Myros' armor, strangely distorted, and seeming to echo from the walls of the arena.
More sound sorcery, Lydia thought. That could pose a problem. They could make Talion hear phantom sounds, throwing off his combat reflexes. Dominion of knowledge, illuminate your sources,
Lydia mumbled, scanning the crowd. Varudin glowed brightly to her right, and Talion and Myros shimmered like stars in daylight. As she scanned the arena, she quickly found Sethridge and Morella glowing in another private box nearby. And as she gazed up to the dais where Adon stood, she realized that he was not glowing at all.
No aura of sorcery?
Lydia pondered.
Is he shielded somehow? That's going to make it harder to notice if he tries to interfere with the match.
She shook her head, looking back down toward Myros.
You may begin by engaging whoever you choose. Every 2 minutes a new opponent will join the fight. If you can defeat an opponent in less than 2 minutes, that gives you a chance to rest. If you can survive for 10 minutes, you will be deemed successful and given your boon,
Myros concluded, planting the Heartlands in the arena floor.
One opponent immediately, one more every 2 minutes. That means up to 5 opponents. Even if he survives fighting the others, he's going to have to fight Myros. Maybe if he keeps his distance, he can shave down the amount of time Myros can engage him before the match ends. Assuming they even let the match end. And Myros has the Heartlands, Orland's sacred artifact. They say any wound it inflicts will bleed forever, giving strength to the wielder.
Lydia raised a hand to her chest, not in pain, but in a fist. A salute.
2 minutes of battle against a god. You'd better be what I hope you are, Talion.
Sounds great,
Talion shouted back, his powerful voice nearly inaudible due to the sheer size of the arena.
Begin,
Adon shouted from above. Talion charged straight at Myros.
Oh no.
Talion's greatsword sang through the air, the Heartlance lifting to meet it at the last moment. A flurry of rapid slashes sent sparks flying from Talion's rusted steel as it impacted again and again against Myros' weapon, every strike deflected with the smallest modicum of effort possible. Lydia leaned over the edge of her box, transfixed by the display. Talion lashed out from a dozen angles, each strike leading fluidly into the next, only to meet the unrelenting wall of steel each time. Finally, after a few heartbeats of Talion's assault, Myros struck back. A simple horizontal swing of the spear slammed into Talion's weapon, carrying him backward with enough force to take him off his feet, sending him sailing backward 20 feet in the span of a breath. Myros followed instantly, dashing across the arena floor in a blur, spear poised for a killing strike as Talion landed and began to slide across the stone. The moment Talion landed, he was swinging again, deflecting the Heartlance and stepping in closer, his blade touching the air where Myros's helm had been an instant before. The Heartlance's bottom flew upward, forcing Talion to sidestep to avoid being smashed, and he brought his blade diagonally across Myros's gauntleted hand. The god of battle stepped back, avoiding the strike, and then planted the spear back into the stone, pausing.
Unexpected.
The voice said, a whisper that carried across the whole of the arena. Talion's reply was too quiet to hear, but it was followed by a flash of his blade toward Myros's right arm. Myros stepped back, withdrawing the spear, and raised the weapon in something that looked like it might have been a salute.
Second warrior, engage!
Adon shouted.
That couldn't have been 2 minutes.
Lydia considered, watching as the man with the sword and shield circled around behind Talion to attack. Talion, seemingly oblivious, pressed his attack at Myros. A splinter of iron broke free from his blade as it struck the tip of the Heartlance, and Talion stepped back, barely dodging a thrust aimed at his chest. As the second warrior approached, Talion spun and smashed his greatsword directly into the man's shield, causing an ear-ringing vibration and taking a visible chunk out of the wood. Grinning, Talion danced backward, the Heartlance's point catching him across the right shoulder as he retreated. Talion stumbled back a few more steps, his left hand reaching across to press against the wound. Lydia winced.
It's all over. A wound from the Heartlance will continue to bleed, no matter how much pressure he puts on it.
With a shout, Talion's hand glowed red, and even from a distance, Lydia could see a hint of smoke rise from Talion's arm. And then he was back on the attack.
Flame sorcery,
Lydia realized.
He just burned his own wound shut. By the gods, how is he standing?
Talion's sudden resurgence caught the Queen's Guard defenseless, and Talion smashed the steel sword right out of the man's hands. A moment later, Talion was in close, slamming a fist into the man's face, and past him, shoving the plate-armored warrior to the floor. The Queen's Guard went down, and Myros gave a nod, spinning the Heartlance and diving forward for another attack. This time, Talion winced visibly as the Heartlance connected with his blade, but he gave no ground. Myros grabbed the spear in both hands and forced it directly against Talion's iron blade, pushing him downward toward the ground.
Third warrior enters,
Adon proclaimed, and in the moment of distraction, Talion swept Myros' leg. The warrior god toppled to the ground, rune-etched plate flashing, and swung the Heartlance directly at Talion's feet. Talion jumped over the strike, then turned and raced toward the newly incoming warrior, laying a horizontal slash into the Queen's Guard's shield. Lydia glanced at Varudin, noticing for the first time that he was at the edge of the booth, leaning over it along with her. He seemed just as transfixed by the fight as she was, which gave her a window to act. Never taking her eyes off the fight, Lydia sat back in her chair, swiftly removing the mirror, quill, and parchment. Talion landed a single glancing blow against the shield, and another against the warrior's left greave. The axe-wielder's counterattacks were too slow, too short-ranged, to catch Talion as he danced backward, readying himself as the god of battle stood back up.
"Fourth warrior enters!"
Adon proclaimed. This time, Talion was the one distracted, gazing upward toward Adon, betrayal evident on his face.
"It hasn't been 2 minutes," his face seemed to say.
"I know," Adon's grin seemed to reply.
Growling, Talion spun on his feet as the Queen's Guard with the shield and mace sprang to advance. Talion charged, right past the mace-wielder, and toward Landon of the Twin Edges, the only fighter that still remained on the sidelines. Landon gave a nod of acknowledgement as Talion approached, catching Talion's incoming blade a graceful parry with his left sword, and then trying a counter with the right. Talion blocked the riposte easily, taking a step back and wincing noticeably as he landed heavily on his injured leg. Lydia winced along with him, watching as Landon raised both of his blades into a high stance, practically sitting the blades atop his armored shoulders.
"The Lysantir stance," Lydia realized. "He's inviting Talion to take a swing at him, gambling that he can parry anything that goes toward his exposed head, or trade hits if Talion goes for a lower part of his body. Since Talion is unarmored, Landon expects that trading blows would be to his advantage."
Talion smirked, nodded, and took a swing at Landon's feet. Landon hopped over the strike, swinging downward with both blades. Talion caught both against the greatsword, then surged forward, shoving Landon back. Landon slashed as he stumbled backward, but his cuts met only open air. Myros was approaching from Talion's side, but the swordsman didn't seem to notice. Lydia grit her teeth, pressing closer against the edge.
"I can't shield him from here, but maybe if I was a little bit closer..."
Talion spun away, tapping the flat of his blade against one of Landon's weapons, and then rushed across the arena into an open space, leaving Landon with a perplexed expression. Talion's head scanned from side to side, taking in his four remaining opponents. Myros made a gesture at the three Queen's Guard, and they spread out at equal intervals, moving to surround Talion and approach him at a steady pace. Talion planted the tip of his sword against the stone and used his offhand to beckon for Myros to approach. Myros didn't take the bait. The four opponents continued to advance as a group, while Lydia snatched one of her pre-written notes and placed it against the mirror.
"Plan E," it read.
Myros surged forward, a wave of steel piercing a dozen places as Talion struggled to dodge. A second and third cut landed against his skin, and Talion fell backward, a perplexed look on his face as he backed up nearly into the stone wall of the arena. Talion gripped his blade tightly, taking a flashing strike at Myros's midsection, but the Heartlance was there, and the bladed edge tore Talion's rusted iron apart. Left with half a sword, Talion struggled to parry Myros's next strikes, each seeming to come faster and harder than the last. Finally, the fourth strike dislodged the iron weapon from Talion's hand. Myros gave a nod and raised the Heartlance, preparing for a killing strike. And the Sakes descended from the sky like a comet, trailing silver fire. Talion caught the still-sheathed blade in his right hand, spinning it in a whirlwind of silver light, deflecting the Heartlance and landing a strike against the chainmail on the inside of Myros's right elbow. Myros took a step back, stunned, as the crowd took a collective breath. The scabbard of the Sakes, lined with metal, was sharpened into a blade now wet with the blood of a god. Landon stepped in next, undeterred by Talion's resurgence, but Talion parried his strikes easily now, his weapon a blur of untraceable motion. 2, 3 strikes landed against Landon's plate, but none made a mark, and another Queen's Guard had stepped in behind Talion, mace at the ready. Talion sidestepped to avoid the mace strike and rushed at Myros, but the god of battle had recovered quickly, and the Heartlance thrust forward to impale the incoming fighter. Talion slapped the spear aside with the Sekhes, never stopping his charge, and slapped his left hand against Myros's armor as he rushed past. Landon's blades shot out of his hands, followed by the blade of the first Queen's Guard to fall, and the mace and axe of the other guards a moment later. All of them flew directly toward where Talion had touched Myros's armor.
"What the?"
Viruden muttered, no doubt mirroring the thoughts of near all the people in the stands.
"Magnetism," Lydia realized. "Talion's feints. Each time he clashed against their weapons, he was magnetizing them."
Myros was a tornado of motion, slamming each of the projectiles with the Heartlance, deflecting them harmlessly. As each weapon was knocked backward, the remaining Queen's Guard retreated to avoid being hit by their own now-flying weapons. Orland's god of battle was not so easily deterred. As each weapon boomeranged back toward Myros's now magnetized armor, Myros smacked them aside, seemingly effortlessly, advancing toward Talion one step at a time. Talion fell back toward where he had entered the arena, a look of determination on his features as he leveled the still-sheathed Sekhes in front of him. Myros snatched one of Landon's swords out of the air and hurled it at Talion, who obligingly dodged the strike. Myros charged as Talion dodged the rebound, bringing the Heartlance downward in a heavy strike too fast to avoid. Talion parried, but the strike drove him back toward the ground, and Myros hopped over Talion's attempt to perform the same sweep that he had before. The Heartlance tilted upward, catching Talion under the chin, flattening him against the arena floor with a thump. Myros did not hesitate, plunging the Heartlance's point toward Talion, but he rolled to the side. The point grazed Talion's side and pierced into the ground. Talion's hand shot upward, grabbing the Heartlance and pulling it deeper into the ground. Myros grabbed the spear with both hands, lifting it and Talion off of the stone. Talion released his grip, tapping Myros on the armor with his hand a second time, and then shoved him toward the entrance. Myros spun toward Talion, thrusting the Heartlance at Talion again, but the Sekhes flickered and deflected the strike. Then a spear flew out of the entrance hallway, arcing toward Myros's armor, followed by two dozen other weapons and pieces of armor. Myros swept the spear in a wide arc, and the entire audience could hear the god's sorcery-amplified curse. Weapons and armor shattered from Myros's strikes, but each piece of shrapnel simply boomeranged back a moment later. Meanwhile, the magnetism gradually began to pull two of the remaining Queen's Guard across the arena, the intensity of the force now sufficient to drag them, armor and all. Talion continued to retreat, his offhand reaching down to cover the freely bleeding wound from the Heartlance's last successful strike. And Myros continued to spin and deflect each of the weapons. Talion raised the Sekhes to throw.
"Enough!"
Adon's voice boomed. The magnetized weapons clattered to the ground, and Lydia gasped as sorcery washed over her, triggering her comprehensive barrier.
"Eru volis, marsharu taurus."
The words were nonsensical to Lydia, but the effect was familiar. Too familiar.
Counter-sorcery,
Lydia recognized immediately.
The ability to remove any sorcerous effect. The greatest gift of Cytira.
Adon had just invoked what she had only ever known to be the power of Cytira, and with greater effect than she had ever seen.
No,
Lydia muttered.
How?
As Lydia watched, even the runes on Myros's plate flickered for a moment, as the god of battle looked upward toward Adon.
"The challenger has proven beyond the doubt that his might matches his bravery. He will be given a place as an ambassador to our court and the boon that I have promised."
Talion nodded, slumping to his knees, catching himself on the Sekhes. Myros advanced on the fallen warrior, and Lydia gripped her sword, readying herself to vault over the rail, a 40-foot drop, if Myros attacked again. As Myros drew close, the god of battle thrust the Heartlance downward, anchoring it in the stone, and reached down with a gauntleted hand. Talion clasped the gauntlet and allowed Myros to haul him to his feet. The crowd cheered wildly as the pair stood, each raising an arm to acknowledge the city's cries. Lydia breathed a sigh of relief, releasing her tense grip on the handle at her side.
"Well," Viruden said, looking to her, "that was unexpected."
Lydia found Talion in the now nearly emptied armory, a medic tending to his wounds. Landon of the Twin Edges was sitting next to him. The sorceress was still jittery with nervousness. Plan E had been one of the contingencies she had hoped to avoid. Placing the Sakes and Talion in the same location was gambling at the possibility of losing both. The swordsman had proven to be worthy of the risk, but she still felt the mild echoes of panic at having made such a rash decision.
"Rash, boy! You gave me an embarrassment there," Landon was saying. "People are going to be talking about that fight for years to come."
"Thanks,"
Talion said, wincing as the medic plunged a stitching needle deeper back into the skin on his left side.
"You've got great speed and reflexes, but my sorcery gave me an unfair advantage."
"That's an understatement," Landon replied. "But you needed it. And if you had to prove something today, God, you sure proved it."
Landon looked up, seeming to notice Lydia entering.
"Ah, court sorceress. You catch all that?"
Lydia nodded.
"Great fighting, both of you. Where are you both heading next?"
"Dinner, I think," Landon replied. "Adon wants to meet Talion at the palace as soon as he's patched up."
"I'd imagine. That was quite a show. Do you two mind if I come along? I'd love to hear more about the fight from your perspectives," she asked.
Landon shrugged.
"Up to this guy."
He nudged Talion, triggering another wince.
"What do you say, swordsman? You want the sorceress to come to dinner with us?"
"Well, if you put it like that, I don't see any way I can refuse," Talion said, giving Lydia an exaggerated wink. "Didn't catch either of your names, actually."
"Lydia,"
the sorceress replied, nodding to Talion.
"Call me Landon,"
the other swordsman replied.
"What about you? I've only ever heard them calling you the Talion, which I guess is true. Rushing showy there. How'd you make it come out of the sky?"
"Trade secret," Talion replied. "And you can call me Solaris."
Chapter 9. Deceiving Sight. Jonan was exhausted and, once again, half-blind as he stumbled into his false bedroom. Maintaining his invisibility over 2 hours had taken a toll, and casting the spell to cause the Sakes to shine like a comet as it hurled into the arena had added to that burden. He had rushed to a hiding place as soon as he had thrown the sword, abandoning the invisibility spell, but the cost to his sight had still been significant. Still, he considered with a grin, it was worth it. I just wish I could have seen Talion's expression when he saw it falling from the sky. Or Miros's expression. That had been even better. Throwing the sword to Talion had been Lydia's emergency plan, and one that had proven to be more successful than he had imagined. On one level, he regretted parting with the sword. He could have simply left the city with it and come home to a cascade of promotions when he handed it over. That, however, was not his mission, nor what he cared about. He locked the bedroom door and slipped the rug off of the secret passage hastily, eager to get to bed. The lack of guests was somewhat disorienting. Talion and Lydia had been a near constant presence for the last several days, and he had been getting used to them.
"I hope they're alive," Jonan considered. "Lydia is playing a dangerous game, and Talion isn't playing at all. He's just dangerous. Or in danger. Probably both."
With a sigh, Jonan opened the passage down to his room. He had only taken the first step downward when he noticed a glint of glass in the wrong place. Peering down, Jonan scanned the area with blurry eyes. Broken glass. Everywhere. Jonan half-stepped, half-jumped back up the stairs, kicking the trapdoor shut a moment later.
Erase image of self.
He rushed to his false bed, reaching into the pillowcase of one of the bottom pillows and withdrew a sheathed leather dagger. With that in hand, he moved to the cabinet nearby, opening the third drawer from the bottom. Four unlabeled glass bottles sat in the drawer. He grabbed the furthest on the left. With the vial in his right hand and the sheathed dagger in his left, Jonan moved back to the trapdoor and pulled it open, hurling the glass vial inside. As the vial shattered, an inky black mist began to spread across the chamber. Jonan slammed the trapdoor shut, took a step to the side, and drew his dagger. And then he waited. Minutes passed, Jonan's heart rattling in his chest. Gritting his teeth, he eventually returned to the cabinet, retrieving the center bottle of the remaining three. The smoke should have lined anyone inside, making them visible. If they have to breathe, they shouldn't be conscious at this point. Jonan flicked the cap off the top of his newly acquired vial and gulped down the contents. With the utmost hesitation, he walked back to the trap door.
Resh, now or never, I guess. What would Valian do in a situation like this? Oh yeah, he'd grab whoever was inside and pull the sorcery right out of them, which I, of course, can't do. I do have a knife, though, he reassured himself. It's kind of sharp.
He knelt down and reopened the trap door, the smoke from the room below rising into his chamber. Hope this counteragent didn't expire, otherwise this is going to be really embarrassing. Jonan took a step down the stairs, tapping the right side of his head with a finger. The darkness seemed to flee from his vision, giving him a clear view of the room below as he descended. The mirrors lining the walls had been smashed very deliberately, perhaps even artistically. One of the mirrors looked to have been sliced apart into over a dozen equally sized pieces, and another remained within the frame, a web-like pattern of cracks spreading across from the exact center. Some patterns, if they existed, were more difficult to discern at a simple glance, especially given that Jonan was more preoccupied with finding the intruder. Once, twice, thrice he glanced over the room, even tapping the right side of his head a second time to intensify his vision further. There was no sign of any intruder within the room. Either they were gone, or their invisibility far outstripped Jonan's capabilities at detection. He did notice another peculiarity, however, an indigo flower atop a piece of folded parchment that sat undisturbed on his bed. Gritting his teeth, Jonan glanced around the room one more time, debating retreat. There was a clear path between the pieces of broken glass leading to his bed. It was deliberate, though he couldn't be sure if it was left for his convenience or so that the intruder could easily leave. He walked the rest of the way down the stairs, drawing the dagger from the scabbard as he walked. Every two steps he paused, jabbing the dagger at the empty air. It wasn't a certain way to find an invisible watcher, but he felt better taking some steps than none at all. His strikes met no resistance. As he reached the bed, he swept the flower and note onto the floor using the edge of the dagger, and then flung the bed's covers to a side, checking if someone was hiding within them. Again, he found nothing, and an awkward series of probing attacks at the air above his bed proved equally fruitless. With another glance around the room, Jonan spun and lashed out in all directions, and then ducked and swept up the note in his left hand, rushing back up the stairs to the floor above. With a swift kick, he closed the trap door, breathing heavily as he slid the rug back atop it. "Well," he considered, "this is bad." The mirrors had not only been his primary means of surveillance, but also his method of communicating with his only contact in the city, an ally that presumably worked for the Order of Valian. His orders were to report to this ally periodically, and he or she had a mirror that matched one of his, allowing them to send messages through the mirrors. How did someone find my hidden room? Was I careless? He sat upon the nearby bed, setting down the dagger, scabbard, and folded note. A grimace crossed his face as he examined the parchment. It was clearly left for him to find, and it could easily be a trap. Will this explode if I open it? He had heard of a type of foreign rune sorcery that allowed for such effects. It wasn't all that dissimilar to what he had accomplished with his mirrors. But the odds of the parchment being deadly were low. If they wanted to kill me, they wouldn't have to be so flashy about it. They would have just had to wait until I came home and slit my throat. He grit his teeth at the thought. Helpless again.
Some things never change, I suppose.
Jonan shook his head. Thinking like this is useless. How'd they find me?
His contact might have been able to accomplish it. With a matched mirror, they might have been able to use some sort of spell to trace the connection between the two. Knowledge sorcery, most likely.
Like what Lydia uses.